Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Turfgrass Epistemology. If you want to know where the truth is, I don't have it, but I'm looking for it. I've been searching for it my entire career, and that's why you're here too. How do we know what we know about turfgrass science? I'm going to do what I can to help in that venture tonight. We have a good article. We have a YouTuber that is violating the law and recording it and posting it on YouTube. We have some fun stuff later tonight. We have we're going to show you how to search for the law in Florida, figure out what's right and what's not right in terms of legalities. I'm going to have some fun with my daughter at the end. It's going to be interesting. Don't forget, pro members, we have our first Zoom meeting is next Tuesday night. We can adjust that time after that meeting to, you know, whoever's schedule, figure out the best time, but that's the only time I can make it next week. So we're going to do that on next Tuesday night at 9 p.m. If you want to join the Zoom meeting with all the other pro members, you need to be a pro member of the channel, and we're going to have a conversation. It's just going to be chit-chat. It's not going to be recorded. It's not going to be broadcast. There's no judgments. It's just turf people trying to build a community, ask questions, tell me what's going on in their world. You tell other people what's going on. And we're going to have fun next Tuesday night. So don't expect me to come with a whole lot. I'm not lecturing. I'm not giving anything if you're coming to that meeting. I'm just there to help facilitate it, maybe lead the discussion a little bit. If you want me to do that, I'm fine doing that. But it's there for more for just a community building event. So that's next Tuesday night. You need to be a pro member if you want to get that link. It's in the community tab. Don't forget, if you're a member at the entry level or the pro level, don't use the normal Calendly link because you're going to pay $100 for that. There's been a couple people that have forgotten that there is a discount for members of $50 and pro members of $100. So in other words, if you're going to do a Calendly meeting with me once a year, don't do the normal Calendly invite. Just be a pro member and get that link that's in the community tab, and you basically pay for itself in one meeting with me. And then after that one, basically it's a free meeting. After that free meeting, you can use the regular members link, which is a $50 link, as much as you want. So I've had a couple people just simply forget that there was a discount for that, and so I've done my best to refund their money, and then they use the correct link. So don't forget that, okay, guys? On that note, Bad Days 24/7. Welcome to the membership. And then there was Josiah Thornton, I think, is a pro member as well now tonight. And then OSU Turfman, pro level membership. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Ryan from Ohio, just north of me. Tonight, I have something sentimental to my heart in the music. This music, and it's going to, I recreated it. It's going to seem like I set it up. I didn't set it up. Okay. I just recreated what already occurred. I was driving to school one day with my daughter, and I happened to be listening to rock, but it happened to be on a country station for some reason. And then when the song went off, it started playing country music. She didn't like that. she was not happy with that. So she let me know, and from the back seat, what she thought about the song that came on. And then she told me, play this song. And so I've recreated that tonight in tonight's music. So hang around to the very end and you'll see what I'm talking about. When she said what she said, I was driving to school, a little tear came down from my eye and I thought, oh, that's my daughter. So it'll be fun tonight at the very, very end. So that's the news. That's what's going on. I had a 2-week break. I was in the Bahamas and then Jamaica and all that stuff. I'll tell you about that on Monday. Monday morning will be the first show for the members only at 10 a.m. Eastern time, I think is when I do that. So the morning shows will be members only, period, from this point forward. Even if I add more morning shows, it'll be for members only. And right now it'll just be the Monday morning show. Thank you, Mr. Lush Lawns. It says beers on me for the meeting. Okay. Thanks for the super chat. Appreciate that. Yeah, I really appreciate that. Thanks, Lush Lawn, Mr. Lush Lawn. I appreciate the chat. Everybody's man, a lot of people are here already today. Great Fox, Connecticut Cubanican, James Petty Sr., Andrew Burris. I did have a good vacation. Thank you, Andrew Burris. I got sick And, but I didn't let that ruin the fun. Okay. I don't really have a lot of time to go into it tonight. I'll go into it on Monday morning for the members, but I'm okay. I have a whole lot of lozenges and I'm on some medication right now. So I'm going to fight my way through tonight and hopefully I don't cough too much, but, it's all good. I had a good time and, see a lot of good people in the chat tonight. So, Reed Grevin went to, you went to Mammoth Cave. Oh yeah. It's a little bit of ways for me, Reed, but, yeah, it's a little further in the western part of Kentucky, but yeah, that's interesting. You were here. I don't know if you're in the general area, if you live in this general part of the United States or not, but that's interesting. Yeah. We should cross paths sometime. There's a couple people that live near me within an hour or two drive. There's a whole slew of people, that live in Louisville or in Ohio or down in Tennessee. And, this part of the world is ripe with a lot of good turf people. Okay. I'm going to get to the, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do the article first. I'm going to try to get through it. And then I'm going to go into the content that I usually do at the beginning. I'm going to do that at the end. And then what I think might happen is if you have any questions about the article as I'm going through it, as I'm kind of meandering through the last part of the show tonight, when I'm going over some videos and some legal stuff, if you have questions about the article, I'll have time. You'll have time to put it in the chat and I'll probably have time to respond to that before I hang up and go to bed. So, let's get into the article and then Monday I'll fill you in on all the details and all the other stuff you guys might want to know. And, you know, since I've been gone. Okay. So the article tonight is called Trinexpac Ethyl Propiconazole Iron and Biostimulant Effects on Shaded Creeping Bentgrass by Eric Irvin. I don't know how to pronounce the Chinese author's name. I'm going to say Junzhong Zhang. I'm sorry for the Chinese audience. And then Sean Askew and Mike Goatley. So this is going to be in Virginia. This was, before I get going, this was actually a topic that was voted on by the members. So if you want to participate in the direction of the channel, I posted a poll about topics that you would like for me to cover. And this was the number one topic, was biostimulants. Okay. I'm not going to say I'm going to follow the poll every time, but in this case I am. And, if you want to participate in that and be a part of the community, then you'll need to be at least an entry-level member, and then you'll see those polls as when I put them up. And this was a result of the members giving me their feedback, okay? This article was published in Hort Technology in 2004. I'm going to read through it pretty quick. I'm going to show all the results in a PowerPoint presentation, and then I'm going to come back to it and kind of read through some of the results because they really wrap it up nicely at the end, very succinctly at the end. So I don't want to miss out what the author said. And the last thing I want to do is misquote the authors or somehow mess up their data or something or mess up the results. I don't want to misrepresent it, I guess. Okay, let's get started. Closely mown creeping bentgrass has moderate shade tolerance compared to other cool season turf grasses. Let me get my thing on here. Okay. Poor creeping bentgrass performance on shaded tees, fairways, and greens is often exacerbated by traffic, divoting, restricted airflow, and increased disease pressure. Turf grasses grown under reduced irradiance have decreased net photosynthesis, limited carbohydrate availability, resulting in reduced root mass and depth and poor shoot density. These potential negatives, coupled with an undesirable increase in leaf elongation and succulence under shade due to increased gibberellic acid production, can combine to reduce persistence and recovery under traffic, as well as was reported for zoysia grass by Dr. Irvin in 2002. So basically what the authors are saying here is that they're setting the case that when creeping bentgrass, what occurs with creeping bentgrass generally, and then what occurs when it's under light stress. And remember, the pyramid of evidence or the pyramid of risk factors. I have that at the beginning of the results, so I don't want to lose track of anybody on what we're doing here in the next month. But the water, light, temperature pyramid that I go over, they're talking about light in this particular case and the impact that light or the reduction of light has on creeping bentgrass growth. Plant growth regulators that inhibit gibberellic acid biosynthesis, such as trinexpec ethyl and fluoroprimidol, have been used to maintain shaded turf grasses. And he has a couple citations here. Okay. So if you're unaware, there are certain things that can be done to some turf grasses in the shade under some conditions that can enhance the quality. Keep in mind, I don't care what you do to the turf grass. If it's in heavy shade, the potential for it to be its potential is limited. Okay. What we're trying to do when grass is in the shade is to reach its maximum potential for shade turf. Okay, but that doesn't come anywhere near the potential that turf grass that would occur in the sun. Okay, so we're trying to put lipstick on a pig. We're trying to make it look the best we can, but it's still in the shade. It's still stressed from reduction of light. Okay. Propiconazole is a sterile inhibiting turf grass fungicide used for control of dollar spot and Rhizoctonia blight. Plant growth regulating effects on cool season turf grass, such as reduced shoot growth, darker green leaves, and delayed senescence due to propiconazole have been reported. So he's saying this is what's going on with shade, bent grass in the shade. This is what propiconazole is, and this is what plant growth regulators are, gibberellic acid, and this is kind of what happens. This is how they can benefit turf grass grown in the shade. All right. Applications of both seaweed extract and humic acid rather than either alone have repeatedly provided improved color, chlorophyll retention, and photochemical efficiency of cool season turf grasses under drought. Now, we're going to go into this whole month's going to be on these humic acids and seaweeds and these biostimulant products, okay? And there's going to be some beneficial effects or beneficial results, but I want to make sure everybody's on the same page that they're usually specific to locations and specific to certain settings in the turf grass. And it's not the case, at least in my opinion, it's not the case that you would expect to see some sort of profound beneficial result consistently from these products, unless you happen to have a consistent type of stress that is, you know, prolonged for a long period, okay? But there can be benefits to some of these products. But I don't want there to be any delusion. You need to understand when those benefits are likely to occur, okay? These improved responses to drought have recently been tied to the substantial cytokinin levels found in both materials. Chlorophyll content has been noted to decline in dense shade, which with such effect presumably contributing to decreased net photosynthesis, reduced rooting, and loss of turf density. Cytokinins have been shown to stimulate chlorophyll biosynthesis and regulate senescence. However, because cytokinins are produced in roots and xylem translocated to shoots, shade-induced reductions in rooting and evapotranspirations imply reduced cytokinin shoot availability. Higher levels of chlorophyll and cytokinins due to seaweed extract and humic acid, or the CPR product, which is another, it's a seaweed extract with, I think it's iron in it, but it's a heavy seaweed extract product. Either seaweed extract and humic acid or this other seaweed extract product applications may function to improve creeping bentgrass shade tolerance, but little information is available regarding such potential. So they set the stage. There's creeping bentgrass. It doesn't grow well in the shade per se. There's certain things that have been done in the past to kind of help that a little bit. There's also some things that happen with gibberellic acids and cytokinins and so forth. These plant hormones, if you're unfamiliar with that, they're plant hormones. And some products contain those hormones that may result in some sort of benefit to creeping bentgrass when it's grown in the shade. But they don't know. Okay. He goes on to talk a little bit about iron, which is one of my little babies. I'm not going to go into that in great detail in terms of what it is. And people know foliar iron. Okay. Our objectives were to confirm an appropriate Trinexpec ethyl application rate and frequency for maintaining pencross creeping bentgrass in dense shade in mid-Atlantic region of the U.S. So they're in Virginia. Determine the efficacy of other PGRs, biostimulants, and iron, and to assess whether the addition of biostimulants with Trinexpec ethyl would have additive, synergistic, or negative effects. Okay? So if you're not familiar with Dr. Irvin or Sean Askew, or Mike Goatley, and I'm sorry, I don't know the Chinese author. I'm sorry, I don't know him or her. It's going to be a little difficult to find a better turf grass research team than that. Okay. I mean, they're out there. I mean, there's a lot of good turf scientists out there, but that's a pretty good team. All right. So we should have some confidence, or I have confidence, that whatever's written, and this is in Hort Technology, it's not the top high-tier journal, but it is a refereed, reputable turfgrass journal. There should be some confidence that you have in this paper regarding its content from the beginning, because the authors are sound. I mean, they put out really good work. Okay, so let's go into the materials and methods. Nicholas Chatterton, first time listener. Great stuff, sir. Thank you. Well, welcome to the show, Nicholas. Thank you for being here. A mature 15-year-old stand of creeping bentgrass, pincross creeping bentgrass with 30% annual bluegrass on a silt loam soil with a pH of 6, organic matter 2.8, phosphorus of 46 pounds per acre. So it's, you know, I don't know what extractant they used on this, but that's fairly low for phosphorus. And then potassium 132 pounds per acre at the Virginia Tech Turfgrass Research Center in Blacksburg, Virginia. So that's where they are. They're in Blacksburg. Nitrogen was applied as a liquid suspension to all plots at half a pound of nitrogen per 1,000 square feet from stabilized urea monthly from May through October. Okay, it's a very common rate of nitrogen. And then in May through October, in 2001, April, June, August, and October in 2002, total nitrogen was 3 pounds per 1,000 square feet in 2001 and 2 pounds per 1,000 square feet in 2002. Okay. Irrigation was applied at first sign of visual moisture stress on the full sun portion of the study area with a traveling water wheel with a radius of throw that covered, and I'm not going to know all those details. Basically, they applied water at the first signs of wilt. So I don't know if you're familiar with how we do research in terms of water management, things like that. If we're not doing a water study, we want to minimize water as a factor, because it is the most influential factor in turfgrass management. But it's typically not what you might think. It's not that there's too little water that usually causes problems. It's typically that there's too much water applied. That's generally the problem that we run into in turf management. And so when you see researchers that are saying, we're going to apply water just to the right, or just the first signs of wilt, just when we start to see a little bit of the incipient water stress, that's when we're going to apply water. And we're going to do it uniformly once we see that. I'm on board with that. I mean, I think that's, if you're going to minimize water as a potential biasing effect of your research, that's the way you should do it. Now, in my own lawn, I do that as well, because I'm in control of the water on my own lawn. I don't have an irrigation system. But I can control that. I have a little tractor water wheel that I use as well. But it's only after I start to see the turf start to kind of, you know, the initial signs of water stress, which you can tell when the leaves start to curl up and the grass starts to turn a little faded grayish, greenish color. You can tell that. Certainly can't expect that in every case, every lawn. But in my case, I do that just because I know too much water is much more common than not enough water in terms of causing turf grass issues. I'm assuming, you know, the average lawn. Obviously, if you're in the middle of Arizona or middle of Utah, it's a different issue. But that's, I'm just saying that to say that they're doing, I think they're doing it the right way. Four, I don't know this, Quonset type frames covered with black knit, high density polyethylene shade cloth specified to block 73% solar radiation were installed over mature field plots on 15th of May, 2001. So that's how they did the shade. This is all going to be under a shade, 88% shade. They said 73% solar radiation. What they measured ends up being 88% is what they say it is. Okay. So they installed shade cloth on plots to simulate or to reduce the light, basically. All right. Okay, treatments were arranged in a randomized complete block design with each shade frame serving as one replication. Now, if you're familiar with another study I went over a couple weeks ago in Florida in the greenhouse, they also did some work with shade and they nested it. Okay. I don't want to go into all the statistics tonight because I don't have time. But you can't nest these things. And in this study, they considered a shade cloth a rep. That's what you're supposed to do. Okay. So again, this is a good team and they're doing things correctly. The following treatments were applied every 2 weeks from June through October in 2001 and May through October in 2002. Now listen up to the treatments. The first treatment was a non-treated control. The second treatment was 0.34 ounces per acre of Trinexpec ethyl. They used Primo Max. The third treatment was 6 fluid ounces of this CPR product And the CPR product is, they actually don't identify it really, really well in this paper, but it is a seaweed extract and iron containing product. They do explain it a little bit further in another part of this, of the paper, but it, it contains a lot of seaweed extract, the CPR. So when you see CPR, that's a seaweed extract with iron in it. Okay. Okay. So it was 6 fluid ounces of CPR. Okay. Then number treatment number four was 3.1 ounces per acre propiconazole. They use Banner Max. Treatment five was 5 grams per thousand square feet of seaweed extract plus 15 grams per thousand square feet of humic acid. Treatment six was 0.11 pounds of iron. This was all sprayed out of iron sulfate. And this ends up, the rate this, if you do the math on this, this 0.11 pounds per thousand, you do the math on it, it's 5 pounds per acre, which is about the max you'd really recommend before you start to run into risk of burn. And then that was it. Okay. They added a treatment in 1 year. In 2002, a seventh treatment was added, a Turnexpec ethyl and CPR as a tank mix at the respective rates listed in treatment two and three above. Okay. All treatments were mixed with water and foliar applied with a carbon dioxide pressurized sprayer. Deliver, and they've sprayed it out at 40 gallons per acre. So this is a foliar application. They're spraying it out, and then the intention is not to be a soil drench. And don't worry if you're going to lose the treatments. Don't worry about that. They're all going to be on the graphs when I get to them, and I'm going to re-explain what it's easier to see on the graphs. Okay? Good evening, CJC575. Ryan, yeah, they mentioned Emerald Isle in here somewhere. I just can't remember. Let me see if I can search for it. They do mention it. I just can't remember exactly where it is. Yeah, my search, this PDF isn't working well, but I do know it's listed in here somewhere. I just skipped over it. It should have been in the, here it is right here. It was up in the introduction. It says the commercial biostimulant CPR Emerald Isle, it has it's an NPK of 401.2. Okay, that contains 28.3% seaweed extract and 28.3% non-ionic surfactant. Yeah, it was in the introduction. That throws me off. Okay. Good catch on the Emerald Isle. That's quick. Okay. All right. Let's get to the rest of the materials and methods. Turf quality and leaf color were rated monthly based on a visual scale of 1 to 9, with 6 being minimum acceptable. Leaf samples were taken on the 29th of August and the 12th of August in 2001 and 2 for antioxidant superoxide dismutase activity. Now that's a really, really fancy way of saying it's a chemical in the plant that is, intended to be representative of what biostimulants would benefit, would increase. It's an antioxidant. It's an antioxidant compound in the plant. I'm trying to get my pencil. Hang on. And so they're gonna denote it as the acronym SOD. I believe that's the acronym. Superoxide dismutase that's SOD. So it's just when you see that SOD, it's the antioxidant that they used. Hang on, let me make a note. Okay, canopy photochemical efficiency readings were taken on the plots immediately prior to leaf tissue harvest for SOD analysis each August, so the antioxidant analysis. So, and that's going to be the materials and methods, because I got a whole lot more I got to get to, and if I don't get through this paper, I'm going to be here for all night long. So, they're in Virginia, they're on creeping bent grass, they're in shade, the heavy shade. And they have a variety of different treatments, Turnexpec ethyl, propiconazole, they have sweet seaweed extract and humic acid, and they have another product that has iron, they have a just straight up iron as well. And they're applying this to creeping bent grass to see how it affects turf grass quality, turf grass color, antioxidants in the plant, as well as canopy photochemical efficiency. They also do, where is it? They also do, oh, I didn't do this because it's really... There's a lot of detail on this, but they also did root strength. Okay, let me show you this. So this paragraph right here explains how they did root strength. Okay, and this is basically what they did was they cut a section of sod off, and they laid down essentially a I'm going to call it a screen, and then they just left the screen there. And then as the plants grew, they lifted that chunk of sod off, and they measured the force that it took to remove that strip of sod. And they counted that as root strength. Okay, you can read all the details here if you want to read exactly how they did it. They go into a lot of detail exactly how that mechanism worked and how they measured the force required to lift it up. Okay, so now let me get into the results and discussion. I'm going to show all this in a PDF, and then I'm going to come back and just read a little bit of the results. So now, what I want to do before I get into any of this stuff is I want to make sure for the rest of this month, we're all on the same page. We're talking about biostimulants for the entire month, but don't lose sight of the goal, okay? Biostimulants, in many regards in our industry, are I don't want to say smoke and mirrors, but they can be very alluring. They can allure, you know, pull you in wrong directions, and you can lose sight of the goal. And the goal is a quality turf grass, acceptable turf grass, whatever that is to you and your clientele, for the least amount of money and the least amount of environmental impact. But so before we ever get to biostimulants, okay, forget the biostimulants for a second. Before we ever even get there, we should have other things in line, okay? What are those things? First thing is, make sure your water is at optimum levels. There's no biostimulant on earth that is going to trump the effect of water, okay? So don't get lost by this super fancy looking, cool looking biostimulant if you haven't got your water in line first, okay? Same thing goes for light. Can you do anything about light? Well, in this case, this is a light study. We have shade. Okay, there's a light inefficiency here, deficiency. But be aware that if your turf is under shade or not under shade, or it's the time of year, it's the fall or the spring, the light's changing, be aware that's going to be more influential. Okay, temperature, same thing. Okay, we're coming out of winter right now. It's going to be 70 degrees next week. I don't know what's going to happen the week after that. Kentucky has got 6-7 inches of snow in April before. Okay. I don't think it's going to happen this year. But, you know, things are going great. Everything's going great. And all of a sudden you get a 6-inch snowfall late in the season, and the snow sits there for 3 or 4 days. Temperature is going to have an effect. Okay. So make sure it's optimal, or at least you're aware that it could be influential. Injury, things like insects, diseases, even weed pressure, all those things are far more important and influential than any biostimulant, okay? Because we're going to show there are some benefits occasionally from biostimulants. There's no question. The results are going to show that in some of the papers. But don't lose sight of this, okay? This is the most important. And the top of this is fertile soil. And some biostimulants sort of fit into that category. But in the category of fertile soil, don't jump into fertile soil and just go right to biostimulants. Think you're going to change some sort of microflora, microfauna in the soil at some great level, and that's going to change and turn your turf into, you know, perfect turf. Within that top category of fertile soil, I want N at optimum levels, phosphorus at not optimum levels, potassium at optimum levels, and possibly soil pH at optimum levels long before I ever start considering biostimulants. So where I'm getting at is, you may have a benefit from biostimulants, but these factors are where we need to stay focused: water, light, temperature, injury, things like, you know, fungicides or pre-emergent herbicides, whatever that's, you know, for injury. And then fertile soil, NPK, and soil pH. If you've got all those things lined up and all those things are optimal, and your turf still looks a little off, or you still want an extra edge on it, then we can start talking about, okay, there may be a benefit to biostimulant applications under these specific situations, okay? But if you ever counsel with me or consult with me on Calendly, and you say, what about this biostimulant? I'm going to go right back through this whole thing with you. I'm going to say, yeah, well, there's some value to that, but it's not more valuable than water. It's not more valuable than light, knowing the influence of temperature. It's not more valuable than a Cellaprint application if you got a huge outbreak. It's not more valuable than nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, soil pH. Okay. So please keep this in mind. You know, this is for the whole month of April. Don't forget this. Please, please. Okay. Now let's get into the results. Okay. So now we're looking at the Kentucky bluegrass quality under 88% shade. All these data are in the paper. I just put them on table in graph form because I think it's a little easier to read and just follow on YouTube. We're going to have the control. Let me get my pen. We're over here, all the treatments. Okay, we have the control. We have Trinex spec ethyl, propiconazole, iron sulfate, and then the CPR, which is a seaweed extract and iron, and then seaweed extract and humic acid. We have on the x-axis June 20th, the quality taken at June 20th, June 24th, June, August, September, and October, and turf quality is on the y-axis. So we're looking at turf quality in June. So at this point, the study just started, and you see there's no differences among any treatments. The study just started. In the next month, in July, you see that there was some reduction in quality. This is Kentucky bluegrass in Virginia. It's in July. The quality went down a little bit, but Trinex spec ethyl and propiconazole were the two treatments that differed from non-treated in July. And Trinex spec ethyl was actually above acceptable standards. It was above the acceptable line of 6. All the other ones were below 6. But Trinex spec ethyl and propiconazole separated themselves from the non-treated turf grass, whereas the iron sulfate, the seaweed extract, the humic acid, and the other seaweed extract did not. In August, basically the same thing. Okay? Trinex spec ethyl, propiconazole resulted in greater quality turf grass than non-treated, whereas the other biostimulants did not differ from non-treated turf grass at this point. September, we see, again, basically the same thing. Trinex spec ethyl and propiconazole resulting in greater quality turf grass, greater quality Kentucky bluegrass in the shade, and then the control and the biostimulants weren't doing anything. In October, the Trinex spec ethyl, now we're moving into more of the cool season. September and October, you still notice the quality is coming up a little bit in the Trinex spec ethyl turf. Trinex spec ethyl, again, is the superior product differing from non-treated turf grass, whereas the other ones are hit and miss. There was one here, the CPR product separated from the non-treated turf grass, but it was still unacceptable. And that's what happened in 2001. Exact same data in 2002, exact same setup. We added a treatment in 2002, or they did. But we're looking at June, July, August, September, and October on the x-axis and turf quality on the y-axis. Kentucky bluegrass quality under 88% shade in 2002. And in June, Trinex spec ethyl and propiconazole. Now this one here, the CPR and Trinex spec ethyl is the one they added in the next year. This was the new treatment. And you'll notice that the one right next to it, this blue bar, is just the CPR alone. So what this tells me as a reader is that the author said they added in something to Trinex spec ethyl to see if it would have any further benefit. And in this particular date, and you'll see this throughout the study, there wasn't any benefit really to adding this seaweed extract to the Trinex spec ethyl. Because you see the Trinex spec ethyl here at a 7.5 and Trinex spec ethyl, the CPR at a 7.5, whereas the CPR alone was at 6. Okay. Propiconazole also was above 7. So we have several treatments, Trinex spec ethyl, propiconazole, and the CPR and Trinex spec ethyl, all superior quality, all acceptable. And there's only the CPR here was acceptable. The non-treated turf was not acceptable. In July, roughly the same thing, but everything's moved down slightly. Okay, Trinex spec ethyl and propiconazole are above acceptable limits, as well as the Trinex spec ethyl with the CPR product. Whereas all the other biostimulants are inferior to those three, and they're unacceptable in terms of turf quality. When we move further into the summer, we're in August now. The Trinex spec ethyl and the iron sulfate kind of comes up here a little bit. It looks a little bit better here. But we have the propiconazole and again, the Trinex spec ethyl with the CPR all resulting in roughly acceptable turf grass, whereas the non-treated still not unacceptable. The biostimulant of seaweed extract and humic acid is still unacceptable, and the biostimulant alone of the CPR of seaweed extract is still unacceptable. So the biostimulants aren't doing much to turf grass quality in this study. Again, in September and again in October, you basically see the same thing. It's Trinex spec ethyl for shaded Kentucky bluegrass and propiconazole as well as having a beneficial impact. Whereas the biostimulants are having essentially no impact, no beneficial effect in for quality. Okay. Now let's look at the color. I'm going to move through this fairly quickly. The color is, oh, they didn't have a reading in June, I remember. Oh, this says, this, the title is color. The y-axis says quality, but it's color. And we see that the trinexpecethyl and propiconazole again are at the top of the list, whereas the non-treated turf grass is similar to the other biostimulants. When we move further into the summer, it's really only trinexpecethyl. Really, that's the only thing really showing a response. And then you have the CPR having a little bit of a beneficial impact here. They're all acceptable. Even the non-treated is acceptable here, but trinexpecethyl is the one standing out. You'll see it again here, trinexpecethyl and propiconazole in September, whereas all the other ones are the same as the non-treated turf grass. They're all acceptable. Even the non-treated turf is at a 6. In October, the color is, again, trinexpecethyl and propiconazole. Okay? So we're not seeing a whole lot of beneficial, hardly any benefit to paying more for biostimulants and putting them out than doing nothing at all on Kentucky bluegrass in the shade in Virginia. We go to 2002. We added in that treatment, trinexpecethyl and CPR, and you see it's the same thing as trinexpecethyl. So there's no benefit. And here's the CPR alone right here. Okay, so and you see it's declined here. So it's this increase here is from the trinexpecethyl. You'll see it again here. This increase here is from trinexpecethyl, which is right here, but alone, and then here it is with CPR. Okay, so it's pretty much a broken record over and over and over. You see the same thing where it's trinexpecethyl here and here, trinexpecethyl here and here, same thing in October, and occasionally propiconazole comes up and shows a beneficial impact, but consistently over 2001 and 2002, consistently with quality and color, the biostimulants on Kentucky bluegrass in the shade, deep shade, had little to no beneficial impact, resulted in little to no beneficial impact. Okay, now let's look at superoxide dismutase of, I can't even say that word, of Kentucky bluegrass under 88% shade in 2001 and 2002. Now, this is the antioxidant. So when you're applying this, when you're applying biostimulants, these all should go up. Okay. Now, ask me, do I care? I don't care. If my clients care, I care. If the golf pro cares, I care. Okay. If the sod producer cares, I really care. Okay. I don't know one person who's a consumer of turf. I don't know one person outside of science that even knows what superoxide dismutase even is. Okay. Now, obviously it's an antioxidant. Obviously there's supposed to be a connection between this and some beneficial impact and so forth. But you're going to see a lot of papers I'm going to go over that show a beneficial impact, but it's on something like this, not something I care about like turf quality or turf color or growth or something that my clientele cares about. Okay. So keep that in mind when you're reading these and seeing these. It's not that they're doing anything wrong. I mean, the scientists are measuring this. If they show a beneficial impact from quality and they didn't measure this, then they might not be able to explain it, right? This is the reason why a lot of times it's measured. Oh, we saw a beneficial impact from quality. They didn't in this study, but let's say they did. Well, why did that happen? Then they're measuring these other components in the plant and it helps explain why it happened, right? But oftentimes this alone is used as a means to convince you to buy something just that it increased some sort of antioxidant. I don't care. So what? Doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is what matters to my clients. That's what matters to me, right? If they care about this, then I'll care about it. Until then, I'll use it as a means to explain results, right? Okay. Superoxide dismutase of Kentucky bluegrass under 88% shade in 2001 and 2 is measured in August of 2001 and August of 2002. We have all the treatments, control, trinexpecethyl, propiconazole, all these things over here. And we see that the control was lower than everything except for the seaweed extract. And the trinexbecethyl, propiconazole, the iron sulfate, and the seaweed extract with humic acid all showed a significant increase, probably nearly double of what the non-treated control was in terms of the antioxidant superoxide dismutase in the plant. In August of 2002, trinexbecethyl showed an increase, okay? And the trinexbecethyl with the CPR showed an increase up here compared to non-treated turf. But nothing else showed a difference between non-treated turf. This B is the same as all these other ones, okay? So even in this case where a biostimulant is supposed to result in an antioxidant or some increase, even in this case, you might actually argue that this is probably biologically significant, but statistically it's not. Okay, this CPR in 2002 showed a little bit of an increase here, but statistically there's no difference between this treatment and the non-treated turf. Okay, let's go to the next one. Photochemical efficiency of Kentucky bluegrass under 88% shade in 2001 and 2. We have August in 2001 and August in 2002. And photochemical efficiency with one at the top and zero at the bottom on the y-axis, with one being 100% photochemically efficient. And we have all the treatments, control, trinexbecethyl, and so forth. In August 2001, the control was around 60, and then trinexbecethyl was probably around 65, I guess, something like that, 63. And nothing was greater than trinexbecethyl, okay? And a few of them were greater. These two here were greater than the control, the propiconazole and the CPR, the seaweed extract. So there was a couple that popped out greater than the control, but there was only one that was a biostimulant that did that, that was different than the control. The other biostimulants in 2001 did not differ from the control. And in 2002, we have a couple of them actually pulled out different than the control, but again, trinexbecethyl was superior to all of them. All right. Now, root strength of Kentucky bluegrass under 88% shade in 2001 and 2. We have October 2001, April, and November 2002 in root strength in kilograms on the y-axis. October 2001, we see that the propiconazole was the only one that differed from the control, and it was significant. I mean, it was, you know, 1.5 times greater, the root strength resulting from propiconazole. In April 2002, we saw propiconazole again, but also we see trinexbecethyl and the other trinexbecethyl product, resulting in greater root strength. In November 2002, the only thing that differed was trinexbecethyl. So time after time after time, we see trinexbecethyl and occasionally propiconazole resulting in greater quality, greater color, and then some other factor such as root strength or antioxidant activity or something like that being greater than the control. But equally as on the opposite end, ineffective were all the biostimulants. For the most part, we saw very little, if any, no consistent benefit to the biostimulants. Okay. So let's go back to the results and discussion. I'm going to read through this real quick and I'm going to wrap it up. Then I'm going to get to the interesting part of tonight. All right. Trinexbecethyl. Twice monthly applications of trinexbecethyl significantly improved creeping bentgrass quality relative to the control in every month of the study over both years. Further, it was only the last rating data of 2002 that the quality of trinexbecethyl treated bentgrass fell below a commercially acceptable level of 6. Leaf color due to trinexbecethyl was also consistently darker than the control plots over every month of the trial. Trinexbecethyl, that's what they found, was the go-to product. Propiconazole. Quality was greater than the control due to propiconazole on 7 of the 10 rating dates over both years. On 5 of the 10 dates, propiconazole quality was equivalent to that of trinexbecethyl. However, at the end of both years, propiconazole quality had dropped significantly below the commercially acceptable level of 6, while that only occurred for trinexbecethyl in 2002. So in other words, propiconazole worked a little bit. It didn't work as good as trinexbecethyl, but it was the results were, you know, enough to be aware of. I mean, certainly enough to consider using that if you're in this similar setting. Last page. Iron. In general, iron sulfate applications failed to have any effect on quality, color, photochemical activity, or photochemical efficiency, or root strength compared to the control. I wouldn't expect anything from root strength or photochemical efficiency, but they did apply this at 5 pounds per acre as iron sulfate. And they didn't see a difference in color, which is a bit peculiar. That's the one sort of question mark in my mind. It's like, well, I wonder why that is, because I've done a lot of work with iron, and I can't think of a time, doesn't mean it didn't happen, but I can't think of a time that I applied iron sulfate to turf grass at the right rate, the right time of year, and didn't see a response. It's nearly 100% of the time. And in this case, they didn't see it at all. So I was like, yeah, that's a little bit peculiar, but you know, it's what they reported. It's what they found. Although they reported some increase in quality and color, they were infrequent and of slight magnitude. These authors speculated that under shaded conditions, iron may not have been taken up by the foliage or utilized by chlorophyll production. Now, there's another study that goes into the effect of iron on chlorophyll and all these other things. And a lot of times there's no influence of iron on the chlorophyll in the plant. And that reinforces or supports my position that there's a great portion of iron that never enters the plant. The color change you see is very likely a result of the iron oxidizing on the leaf surface and never entering the plant. Because if it entered the plant and then resulted in an increase in green color, you would expect to see some sort of change in chlorophyll content or chloroplasts or some sort of component in the plant that is associated with chlorophyll or the green color. And a lot of times we don't see that. So he goes through there and discusses that, and you guys can read that if you want to, where there's a lot of work done and sometimes you don't see any change in the plant. But the oxidation on the leaf is what I say is likely causing that. Sequential applications of seaweed extract containing formulated product CPR resulted in greater quality compared to the control on only 2 of 10 rating dates, but in general did not result in commercially acceptable turf grass. So seaweed extract from the CPR, 2 of 10. Okay. So it's up to you whether you want to spend all that money and get a 20% chance on seeing a beneficial response. Compared to Trinexpecth or propiconazole, where it's like 80 or 90% chance you're going to see a benefit. Leaf color was greater due to CPR on 3 of 9 rating dates. Okay, so it just didn't really have a consistent benefit. Seaweed extract and humic acid. Quality of seaweed extract and humic acid plots fell in an equivalent manner to the control due to dense shade over both years. Color was improved on only 2 of 8 rating dates, while canopy photochemical efficiency was slightly improved in August. As expected, given the limited positive responses detailed above, seaweed extract and humic acid failed to improve root strength on all measurement dates. I'm coming down here to the end. Biologically significant levels of cytokinins have recently been reported to be present in seaweed extract and humic acid, with enhancement of leaf cytokinin levels due to seaweed extract plus humic acid application prior to drought, resulting in improved tolerance. There's a lot in that sentence. Don't skip over any word in that sentence, okay? If you're going to use there's a lot in that sentence that's very specifically worded, okay? Cytokinins have been shown to stimulate chlorophyll biosynthesis and regulate senescence. Shade-induced shallow rooting may limit cytokinin availability to the shoots, although neither endogenous cytokinin levels nor chlorophyll were measured in this experiment. It was presumed that exogenous applications of cytokinin-containing seaweed extract and humic acid may increase these hormones or pigment levels enough to improve shade tolerance. However, our data indicate that the slight improvements in color and photochemical efficiency measured due to seaweed extract and humic acid applications to shaded creeping bentgrass were not sufficient to sustain commercially acceptable quality. Excuse me. What they're saying is, there was a little bit of a benefit here or there, but it wasn't enough to really have a beneficial impact. The CPR plus Trinexpec ethyl. In 2002, a tank mix treatment of CPR, and remember the CPR is a seaweed extract, plus Trinexpec ethyl was added to investigate whether the positive effects of Trinexpec ethyl could be enhanced. The results for all parameters indicate equivalent responses whether Trinexpec ethyl was applied alone or in combination with CPR. These results serve to further support the view that reduced leaf elongation due to anti-gibberellic acid PGRs is of primary importance for improved shade tolerance. In summary, applications of Trinexpec ethyl every 2 weeks from May through October resulted in 33% better creeping bentgrass quality than the untreated control, in 88% shade at the end of the first year, and 44% better quality at the end of the second year. These results were consistent with those in Michigan, where comparable to 2 to 4 week rates of Trinexpec ethyl also provided superior creeping bentgrass quality. Propiconazole was also effective in improving shade tolerance and providing 17 to 13% better quality than the control. Genex Spec Ethyl and PPC provide a darker, or Proconazol provide a darker leaf color and increased April 2002 rooting strength by 27 and 29%. Here we go. This last sentence. Slight but inconsistent increases in color due to iron, seaweed extract, or seaweed extract with humic acid did not result in improved turfgrass quality or root strength. The addition of the seaweed extract to Genex Spec Ethyl in 2002 provided results that were not different from those of Genex Spec Ethyl alone. These results support concluding that suppression of leaf elongation due to the anti-gibberellic action of PGR, such as Genex Spec Ethyl, and to a lesser extent, propconazole, are the primary factor in improving shade tolerance of creeping bent grass. Increased leaf chlorophyll and chlorophyll levels due to Genex Spec Ethyl, propconazole, iron, or seaweed extract appear to be of secondary and insufficient effect by themselves for improved shade tolerance. So, if you're growing creeping bent grass in the shade and you think you're going to have some sort of benefit by buying a biostimulant because their marketing sheet says you will, or because there's somebody says that, well, you read an article or you listen to a paper or listen to a sales pitch on it. There's no evidence in this paper to confirm that that's true. Very likely that you're going to be wasting your money. However, on the opposite end, there's pretty good evidence in this paper that Genex Spec Ethyl and propconazole will have a beneficial impact on creeping bent grass growing in the shade. Okay? That's it on that paper. I'm going to close that out. And I'm going to get to some interesting things. Now, if you have any questions on the paper, let me just see if there's any questions on the paper before I go too far. Tanner Moore asks, is molasses a biostimulant? I don't know if someone can look up the definition of a biostimulant, but it's my understanding that the definition of a biostimulant is any compound that can provide a beneficial plant response that is beyond the response that would occur from the nutritional components of the compound. So molasses doesn't have any nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium. As far as I know, I think it's just carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. I don't know what else is in there. So I would, if there has any sort of beneficial effect, I know there's one paper from Clemson that has some beneficial effect from molasses. But most of the time you don't see any benefit from molasses. And so I would consider that, in my opinion, I don't know what there's an official agency on this or not, but in my opinion, it would be a biostimulant because there is no nutritional component to molasses that would result in a response. So if there is a beneficial response, it would have to come from some non-nutrient component. But I could be wrong on that. I'm not a molasses expert. I think you guys are probably chit-chatting with each other too. That's fantastic. I'm just trying to keep track of if there's any questions specific for me. I'm going to say no. Mike Conroy asked, what was the Genex Spec Ethyl rate, or the T-Nex rate? The rate on the Genex Spec Ethyl was 0.34 ounces per acre. Wayne SR says, are creeping bentgrass and Kentucky bluegrass cultivars, what cultivars would you expect to be good in the shade? That's a question probably for a turf physiologist. I know good turf physiologists, but I'll have one on probably in June. Right now, I think he's scheduled for June. He may be able to answer that question, but I cannot. I could give you an answer, but it's probably wrong. So I'm not going to. Josiah Thornton, do you think the results will be the same on warm season turf? Well, in this case, we're dealing with putting greens. So if you're going to say warm season turf, I'm going to say something like Tiff Eagle or something like that. It's very possible It's possible. We wouldn't be putting down a lot of propiconazole on Tiff Eagle, but with regard to the effect of the biostimulants on the turf grass in the shade, would it result in some sort of beneficial response on warm season grass? Because even though it did not have a beneficial response on cool season grass, I can only speculate, but I would say the response would likely be similar. I don't think you're going to have a lot of, well, it's hard to say because I mean, you're not going to be able to grow Tiff Eagle with 88% shade. It's going to be dead. So warm season grasses don't respond well to shade as well as cool season grasses do. So I don't know the answer to that question, but I would suspect that the influence or lack of influence from the biostimulants would probably be similar. The influence of biostimulants are only going to be beneficial in very specific cases. I don't think biostimulants, I know this is what they would like for you to believe, but in my position is I'm not convinced that biostimulants are products that should be considered as a broadcast application across all turf grasses at all times. They're specific niche products for niche situations that might be able to give you a little extra edge beyond the nutritional program that you're on right now. Sure Guy, what's my thoughts on Milorganite? Good fertilizer. Sure Guy, you're about to have about a 30-minute lesson on Milorganite real quick here, okay? We're getting into that right now, okay? You're going to hear exactly what my thoughts are on Milorganite. Sometimes I think, you know, maybe I plant these people in the crowd, but I swear I didn't. Okay, guys and gals, let's get to the fun stuff. Any more questions, put them in the chat. All right, now, I lived in Florida for 20 years. I was a professor at University of Florida for two or three years, whatever it was. I was a student there for 5 or 6 years. I worked in the industry there for, I don't know, 10 years or something, whatever it was. And so I know Florida fairly well. And it's a quagmire in terms of fertilizer. Okay, the lawn fertilizer rules are put in place on emotions, not on logic, not on science. The, you know, elected officials, I'm not going to get into the whole thing right now, but they are, whatever it is, but we still have to follow the law, okay? Even if the law makes no scientific sense, that's the law. But because it's such a quagmire down there, and there's different, you can go from one part of one county to a different part of the same county and fall under two different laws. You can go from county to county and have two different laws. The state has their own umbrella sort of a law, okay? There's all sorts of stuff. And the challenge is, how do you know what you're supposed to be applying when you literally can apply one fertilizer to one side of a lawn, one side of the street, and on the opposite side of the street, it's illegal, okay? That's how messed up it is down there. It's just a big mess. But nevertheless, we need to do our due diligence to follow the law. And I will say this, I am very pleased and very proud of the lawn care operators who take this very seriously. The people who are applying it correctly are usually the applicators, the big companies, even the small companies. They do, I mean, from my experience is, they really do their best to follow the law, okay? I can't speak for the homeowners, as we'll see in just a minute. But the lawn care operators, the applicators, and they may, you know, they might not necessarily do it every time, but they're trying to follow the law as best they can. But it's still very difficult. How do you know what you're supposed to do? How do you know when you're supposed to apply it, where you're supposed to apply it, when you can and can't apply it? It's just a big mess. So this is what I recommend people. This is where to start. And I'm going to show you a very easy, if you're in Florida, very, very simple and easy way to know wherever you are in the state, what fertilizer rules and laws apply to you. Okay. Let's get to, I think I can go to the internet here. Okay, so if you go to the internet, you can search in Florida Urban Turf Rule or Florida Fertilizer Law, and it's going to come up this rule 5E-1.003. And this is the law, this is the state law for Florida in terms of fertilizers, okay? And you can read down through here all the different derivations and all the changes and things that have happened. But this is the most current one that occurred in January 8th of 2015. You're going to click on this view rule here, and it's going to pop up a Word file, okay? This Word file is the Florida law, okay? And you're going to read through here. If you're looking to find out, is it legal to apply this, or is it legal to apply that, or what's the Florida law? You're going to read through here, and it's all here. It's on the labeling and so forth. I mean, read down through here. It's going to have definitions like urban turf and lawns and exactly what they mean. It's all legal jargon. No phosphate fertilizer means any fertilizer product with less than 0.05%. Low phosphate fertilizer means fertilizer products intended for new or established urban turf or lawns with phosphate levels equal to or above 0.5%. Remember all this stuff. It's going to be very important in the next 10 minutes, okay? Low phosphate fertilizer, anything above 0.5. Established urban turf means any turf over 12 months, and it goes through all the little legal definitions. Now, keep going down here, and it says labeling requirements. Especially fertilizers, da-da-da. No phosphate fertilizer shall not contain any more than 0.5, da-da-da. Now, section B, section, I don't even know how this is legally denoted. Anyway, right here in little B, it says, fertilizers labeled as low phosphate fertilizers, which again, remember, that's any fertilizer that goes to home lawns that has greater than 0.5% phosphorus in it. Okay. Fertilizers labeled as low phosphate shall have use directions that do not exceed an application of 1/4 pound of P2O5 per 1,000 square feet and not to exceed 0.5 pound of P2O5 per 1,000 square feet per year. So no matter where you're at in Florida, if you're going to apply, except for establishment, there's a separate amount you can apply when you're establishing new turf. But if it's for an established lawn, okay, an established turf, urban turf, there's no place in Florida that you can apply more than 0.25 pound of phosphorus per application. And there's no place in Florida you can apply more than 0.5 pound of phosphorus in a single year. Okay? So that's the maximum app rate and annual rate for phosphorus. And that is statewide. Okay? Now, when you go into different counties, there's more restrictions. But this is how you'd find the state information that would apply to everybody in the state. Okay? So don't forget, if you want to know where it is, it's 5E-1. You can go to, you can just go to the internet and just Google Rule 5E-1 Florida fertilizer labels or something. It'll pop right up. Okay? So now, let's just say, hypothetically, let's just say you're in a county. And let's just say, hypothetically, you're in Manatee County, which is Bradenton Parish, Florida. And you go, well, okay, the law says I can't apply phosphorus more than 0.25 pound or 0.5 pound per year. But I'm in Manatee County. We have different rules here. We have more restrictive rules than the state rule. How do I know what the rule is where I live? You can do it the hard way, which if you want to do it this way, it's fine. You can go to the internet and you can Google it, and you can Google Manatee County and fertilizer, you know, applications or fertilizer law, and you'll eventually come to this. This is the Manatee County website for landscape maintenance and fertilizer regulations. And you can scroll down through here and you can read all the definitions, just like the previous law said. You can go down through here and da 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 da. Now, when we get down here, it's going to say this. Under section 2-14-65, it says fertilizer content and application rate. It's going to go through there and it's going to explain the nitrogen application rate. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the phosphorus application rate, but it's mandated by the state. Okay. But look at section B. No fertilizer containing phosphorus shall be applied to turf and or landscape plants in the county, except where phosphorus deficiency has been demonstrated in the soil underlying the turf and or landscape plants by a soil analysis test performed by a state of Florida certified laboratory. Any person who obtains a soil analysis test showing phosphorus deficiency and who wishes to apply phosphorus to turf and or landscape plants shall provide a copy of the test result to the county administrator prior to the application of phosphorus. So let's just say hypothetically you're in Manatee County, and let's just say you want to apply Milorganite. Can you apply it? That's the question. The answer is yes, you can apply it. if your soil test shows you're deficient in phosphorus, and if you notify the county before you apply it, you can apply it. But if you don't have a soil phosphorus deficiency and you don't notify the county, then you can't apply any phosphorus. All right. If you choose to apply Morganite, you're still restricted by the state rate. You can't go out there and apply 12.8 pounds per thousand. Okay. State rate mandates you apply half that. Now, this is all legal jargon and very difficult to find. It's not easy. You got to track your way through a bunch of stuff. You got to read through all this jargon and it's just a mess sometimes. What do I recommend? Well, if you go to Google and you just Google Florida or Urban Turf Rule app, or say Florida Fertilizer Rule app, or IFAS Fertilizer Rule app, there's an application website that'll pop up. And it looks a lot like this. Okay? So anywhere in the state of Florida, this has the entire state of Florida map on it. SJC, you're reading my mind. This has the entire state of Florida on it. Anything in orange has a county ordinance. Anything in blue or teal color has a municipality ordinance. Anything in gray has no ordinance. And all you got to do is click on any county and it'll pull up. Now, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, let's just look at Manatee County, which is right here. We just go to Manatee County and we click on it. Let's just put it like, maybe, let's just say, hypothetically, put it right there between Parrish and Bradenton, Florida. Whoops, it came on and went off. Give it a second. It's a little slow. Hang on. There it is. Now, over on the right-hand side, you're going to see fertilizer ordinance, a little window pop up. And it's going to say restricted periods, weather, saturation, da-da-da-da, and phosphorus. You click on phosphorus and it says zero phosphorus without a soil test demonstrating deficiency provided to the county administrator prior to the application. Exactly like the law just said. The law just said that's exactly the verbiage from the law. Okay? So you can go anywhere in the state of Florida and you can, and it has slow release nitrogen rates that you, you know, greater than 50%, greater than 70%, whatever the law is for that particular location. The dates of the restrictions, all the stuff. Okay? You can go to any location in Florida and you can find out exactly what restrictions apply to you regarding fertilizer that you apply to your lawn. Let's just say, for some reason, you're inclined to, you say, you know what, Travis, I follow the law. I know all about that. I follow the law. And it kind of annoys me sometimes that other people don't follow the law, but, you know, it is what it is. I don't know who to even contact. I have no idea who to even contact if I saw someone dumping, you know, arsenic down the water, you know, dumping some pesticides in the drain. I have no clue who to even call. I'd like to be a good citizen, but I don't even know who to talk to. Well, what you can do is this. You can go to the internet and you can Google management of storm generated hazardous waste, Florida Department of Environmental Protection, and this little PDF will pop right up. And this has all the contacts for the state of Florida. Hazardous waste. You can scroll down through here if you like. And you can scroll down to say, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, Manatee County. And here you'll find a gentleman named Paul Panic, who is extremely respected, very nice guy. And you'll have his email here. And you'll have his phone number here. And if you live, say, I don't know, somewhere between Parrish and Bradenton, and you want to contact the state of Florida, and you say, you know what? My neighbor was dumping a bunch of stuff in the lake the other day, and this just doesn't seem right. I mean, someone needs to, you know, someone come by and check on this. That's who you would call. You'd call Paul. Okay? You will not be disappointed. Paul is, he was the employee of the year. I think he was the Manatee County City or County Employee of the Year. Very nice person. Very knowledgeable. So that's what, if you ever are so inclined, you might want to consider that. And all the counties are on that page as well. Okay. Now, having said all that, let's go to a little video. Let me see if I can get this open, and I'll have to adjust the screen here. Now we're going to go to a little video. If I can get all this on here. Excuse me, I'm adjusting the video on the screen for the viewers. This video comes from a website or a YouTube channel called The Lawn Care Nut. And this video is called, This is the Right Way to Apply Milorganite. And I'll say this, this is a very good video about the wrong way to apply milorganite in Manatee County, Florida. Let's see what the Lawn Care Nut has to say about applying milorganite.
What's up, y'all? I'm Alan Hain, the Lawn Care Nut. Thanks for coming back for yet another weekend vlog.
Today we're gonna go way back, and we're gonna talk about my old buddy Milo and dig into a little bit of the math and then calibrate an old Scott spreader.
Okay, so that's a very good introduction. He's gonna talk about milorganite. He's gonna calibrate a spreader. We're gonna skip ahead to 124.
1.5%. I still use milorganite twice a year, once in the spring and once in the fall. And for me, it's more of an organic soil enhancement. I do like the fact that it's got some nitrogen and some iron in it, but for me, it's really about putting organic material into my soil. That's really what I like this for most. And
now, I just showed you the state law, showed you the Manatee County law. No milorganite can be applied in the entire county of Manatee County anytime unless you're phosphorus deficient and unless you've notified the Manatee County code enforcement officer, Paul Panic. I spoke to Paul and I said, can you send me a record of the people who have asked for that phosphorus deficiency? And he said, I haven't received one in the last 10 years. No one's sending anything saying they're deficient in phosphorus in the last 10 years. Let's continue. 523.
Now we come right back down in here, and what do you see on the bag right there? Covers up to 2,500 square feet. See, that's within our standard, thousands of square feet. So let's memorize that first thing, that a bag of Milo covers 2,500 square feet.
Not in Florida. Look and see what this says right next to it. What does that say right below covers to 2,500 square feet? It says Florida, 5,200 square feet. Okay. For those of you who don't know, a lawn care nut lives between Bradenton, Florida and Parrish, Florida. This bag does not cover 2,500 square feet in Florida. Anywhere in the state of Florida, doesn't matter what county you're in, it covers 5,200 square feet, just like is labeled on the bag. Okay, we continue.
And now that we know that, now we want to find out how much does this bag weigh so we can find out what I call our pounds on the ground. And you can see this bag weighs 32 pounds. So I've got 2,500 square feet of coverage and 32 pounds. Let's do a little bit of math, and this is where it gets really fun. 32, and we're going to divide that by 2.5 because this covers 2.5 or 2.5 1,000 square foot sections.
Not in Florida. Not in Florida. And probably not in a lot of the other parts of the United States where there's phosphorus restrictions. Okay? Having said that, you can recommend whatever you want on YouTube. Recommend away. No law against that. It's up to the applicator to follow the law. Right? That's the reason I don't give recommendations or anything like that with regards to pesticides. Follow the label. That's my recommendation on pesticides. Follow what the label says. Anything I say on the internet or YouTube about pesticides is irrelevant. Follow the label. Okay, let's continue.
2,500 square feet is 2.5 1,000 square foot sections. Remember I said our standard is 1,000 square feet. So 32 pound bag divided by 2.5 1,000 square feet sections, or 2,500 square feet, what that comes out to is 12.8. So that is called our rate. And that means we are to put down 12.8 pounds per 1,000 square feet.
Not in Florida. Not in Florida.
So that is called our bag rate or our application rate. 12.8 pounds of malorganite across every 1,000 square foot section of the lawn. That's what we just figured out there. Now,
so we're going to skip ahead just for one little bit more minute and then we'll be done. He can recommend whatever he wants to recommend. No law against that. If you're going to go out and apply it, there's a law against that. Let's see what happens.
Of this video here very soon. So remember that 1,000 square foot area over there? My job is to confirm that I'm going to get 12.8 pounds of product spread evenly across this 1,000 square foot area using my spreader at the recommended spreader setting. You see, I'm going to test on a 1,000 square foot area. That way, if the setting is off, I'm not risking an entire bag here. I'm just testing on one small area that I can control.
Now, he's right about that. You want to do it on 1,000 square feet to test it. He goes on and actually videotapes himself spreading this fertilizer on his lawn in Florida. Okay? So, what I would say is go to YouTube for some general ideas, but go to IFAS, Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences, for what you're supposed to be doing. Okay? If you're in Florida, And you listen to this guy's recommendation, and you go out and you apply it at this rate, 12.8 pounds per thousand, you're breaking the law. Anywhere in the state of Florida on home lawns, you will break the law. There is a Florida label on the rate on that label, which is half that. Okay, you can apply that at the half the rate, but again, you can only apply it at half that rate in locations where there's not a specific phosphorus restriction. In Manatee County, there is a phosphorus restriction. You can't apply any phosphorus, period, until you get a soil test and it shows that it's deficient. And you send that soil test to the officer and let him know before you do the application. And just so happens, in that particular county, it's extremely phosphorus rich, and you'll probably never find a soil test that's low in phosphorus in that particular county, a part of the state. Phosphorus is mined from Florida, if you don't know that. It doesn't mean every part of Florida is high in phosphorus. But there's very, very rich phosphorus deposits in Florida. And that's one reason why we just don't really need to apply any phosphorus in most locations in Florida. It's at least on home lawns in Florida. There's really no need. You're not going to see any benefit from that. Okay? So that's what I got on that. Don't follow YouTube recommend. Don't even follow my recommendations on YouTube. Follow the evidence, and the evidence is either published in the literature, published from Landgren institutions. It is scientifically refereed or vetted. You know, let's do our due diligence to follow the evidence as best we can. In some cases, we can't. I get that, but you know, I make mistakes on this. I'm live on YouTube. I might say something and make a mistake. So don't always follow exactly what I'm saying on YouTube. If you counsel with me, I'm looking at the law on another screen, or I'm looking at your state and I'm looking at their recommendations, and I want to make sure that we follow. Like, for example, if you're in Georgia, I got the University of Georgia's turf site over here on my other screen, and I'm looking at their recommendations and I'm trying my best to follow their recommendations in that location. Okay. There's certain things there's some flexibility here or there. But please do your best, do your due diligence to, you know, apply the products within the law Okay. And in Florida, I'm not going to go down the roads of whether or not it's scientifically valid. That's a whole nother can of worms, but it is the law. And we need to do our best to follow that. And if you follow this particular gentleman's recommendation, you would be breaking the law. Okay. Okay. That's all I got for tonight. If you have any questions, put it in the chat and I'm going to head out shortly, but, I don't see any questions in the chat. And YouTuber49 says, I thought this was about biostimulants. Yeah, well, I do a paper and then I do a video or I do something else. If you're new to the channel, that's kind of how it works. Okay. Monday morning will be up for members only. Have a good weekend and I'll see you guys on Monday morning. And I'll see some of you tomorrow on Calendly. Till then, have a good evening. Bye. And now, Turf Thoughts by Ken Corley. Why do people say the grass is always greener on the other side? I've seen the other side, and it looks like garbage. Unless you live in garbage and you're looking at my lawn, then the other side would be greener. But if you're living in garbage, why are you looking at my lawn? Don't you have bigger things to worry about?